thank you for the introduction. Thank you all for being there, and apologize for the very long title. So my name is Gabriel. I'm a new professor at the University of Florida in soil water sciences, working at Sustainable Nutrient Management System. This is work that I conducted for my postdoc, which was at UBC in British Columbia. I'd like to acknowledge Sean Smuckler, who was my postdoc advisor, and Matthew and Brianna were two undergraduate systems that did their undergraduate thesis on that project. And I'd like to continue with acknowledgments because we always run out of time, but funding sources: Katie Neufeld, who was the lab technician, Tim Carter was the farm manager, other undergraduate students that helped, as well as the UBC farm staff. They're all very useful in making this happen. So there are many issues or challenges in nutrient management systems in a vegetable system. One of the biggest problem or issue we have is we typically have a very high crop demand but low uptake efficiency. So nutrient recovery of the nutrients we added is often very low, can be as low as 25% of nitrogen applied, for example, a lot of brassicaceae. There are many management practices that can help. Fertigation is one of them, where we kind of spoon feed the crop. That's not necessarily applicable to all cropping systems. Slow release fertilizers, nitrification inhibitors, these kind of things can also help as well. In the case of in a certified organic production systems, we can also use processed organic fertilizers such as blood meal, feather meal, bone meal, these kinds of things that can be used. And these also have potential to help. However, we need to recognize that their formulation, the ratio among nutrients, is different than what we'd find in urea or triple superphosphate. So we need to understand how they differentiate, they act differently into these systems. And there's a lot of focus more and more on soil health, soil quality. What about other soil properties? Well, in vegetable systems, we typically have low soil organic matter accumulation. That's partly due because we produce a small amount of biomass that stays in the system, the residual biomass, with low carbon nitrogen ratio. So that typically decomposes relatively fast. We also have heavy tillage that basically acts as kind of a fire to burn whatever we're capable of putting into the systems. And so in this context, bringing in organic amendments, compost and manures, can help build soil organic matter. It also provides fertility benefits, but we have some issues. Nitrogen phosphorus stoichiometry is one of them, and variable nitrogen availability being another. So if we took a little bit a closer look at this N to P ratio, manures are typically enriched in phosphorus relative to crop nitrogen need. You can see that for the vast majority of manures, most commonly found manures, the N-to-P ratio is below 4.5. If we look at the N-to-P ratio in a lot of vegetable crops, this is typically higher than 5 or at least higher than 4.5. So what does it mean to have this mismatch? It means that when we're trying to meet crop nitrogen demand with only organic amendments, we typically over-fertilize for phosphorus with these P-rich manures. The alternative, which is the match phosphorus removal, leads to undersupplying of nitrogen and typically lower yields. The situation is also more complicated because nitrogen, determining the percentage of nitrogen that is plant available in these manures and compost, is not trivial. We typically see a decrease in, a decrease in nitrogen availability as the carbon nitrogen ratio increases, but you'll notice that there's quite a bit of variability with for a specific carbon nitrogen ratio. And so this is not a perfect tool. So the overarching question here is, how can we best utilize or combine organic amendments and processed organic fertilizers in vegetable systems to maximize benefits? To do this, I set up an experiment at the UBC farm. The UBC farm is located in Vancouver, Canada. That's just a little bit north of 3 hours north of Seattle, so a relatively mild climate, mild winters, cool summers, and it's located on a spodosol, a sandy soil, a spodosol that was developed on glacial till. And it is a certified organic farm. So we had four treatments that were focusing on this N-to-P imbalance idea. The first one is a control where we use municipal compost to provide phosphorus to match phosphorus removal from the crops. The idea here is that we're going to under-fertilize for nitrogen, we know that, probably going to get lower yields, but we want to quantify that yield penalty to basically get a bigger picture compared to other benefits that this system may provide. The compost system is using the same amendment, but this time we're targeting nitrogen demand, at least nitrogen recommendations from the BC Agriculture Ministry. And in this case, we know that we should over-fertilize for phosphorus, but hopefully we'll get good yields. We have a manure treatment using composted poultry manure, an amendment that's typically more readily available, so seeing how these two amendments can play out. And then we have our hybrid system where we're using the control to match for phosphorus removal, and we're adding blood meal, which is very rich in nitrogen, to compensate for nitrogen availability. We set up 4 plots per treatment in June of 2015. In the summer of 2015, we grew a cauliflower cabbage rotation, and you'll notice that the cauliflower, which is only what I'll be focusing on today, has a very high NFP ratio, so we're really far off from these amendments. So that should lead to high imbalance between nitrogen and phosphorus. We grew a winter rye clover cover crop. I will not speak too much in details about that. And in summer of 2015, we grew a beet, not sugar beet, but a horticultural beet, as well as fennel. And you'll notice that the NP ratio is much lower, so much closer to what we would have from these organic amendments. So hopefully we don't have as much of an imbalance between the amendment and the crop we're trying to grow. The plots were monitored for 2 growing season, crop yields, nutrient content, soil nutrients, as well as greenhouse gas fluxes. I will not speak about that last point, but I'll be happy to answer questions you may have on that. If we take a closer look at these different amendments at their nutrient content, we see that a nitrogen concentration varies quite tremendously from 2 to 2.5% all the way to 15.5 to 16%. And the variation is because we had 2 years, so we didn't have exactly the same amendment for those 2 years. The percent that is plant available varies between 25% all the way to 70% for the blood meal. And so conversely, you get the C to N ratio, which is much lower for the blood meal, representing a much more labile source of nitrogen. Phosphorus was highest in the poultry manure and lowest in the blood meal. And if we look at the N to P ratio, we see that it's below 4 for both of these organic amendments. The blood meal is much higher, and this is what helps us to rebalance the phosphorus and the nitrogen in these systems. Okay, so what did it do in terms of soil nitrogen? So on the y-axis here, you have the sum of KCl extractable ammonium and nitrate as a function of time, and we have the different treatments here, the control, the compost, the manure, and the hybrid. So what we see here is right after the application, we see a peak in the manure in both of these years. The hybrid, we side-dressed with the blood meal, so this is why the peak is somewhat delayed here and there, but relatively high availability after application. The compost, we saw increases only in 2015, not so much in 2016, and this may be due to the sampling. There was a little bit of a delay between when we apply the compost and when we measured for nitrogen, and there were heavy rains in between, so we may have lost some of the nitrogen in that. 2 additional points I'd like to make. This little peak was right after we incorporated the brassica residues into the system, and you do see that peak of nitrate and ammonium showing up. Similarly, this is just before we apply the compost, so after we had tilled, mowed the cover crops in, and you see about between 20 to 25 milligrams of nitrogen per kilogram of soil showing up after that. So that's an interesting nitrogen credit we can get in these systems. How did it affect yield? Because that's often the bottom line, what we think about or what we care about most. I'm expressing these as relative yields, so yields of a given treatment relative to the highest plot in the system. So this is why no treatment gets to 100% in these systems. So if we look at cauliflower, that high nitrogen phosphorus crop, we do see that the control gets hammered about 40% of relative yields, and increases to about 75% in the compost, 85% in the hybrid, and the manure is about 95%. And you see here the statistical difference. Basically, the manure is better than all of them except the hybrid, and we do see some benefits of having this hybrid, this blood meal, in this very high nitrogen-demanding cauliflower crop. For the beet, which has a lower NP ratio, we see a much more tighter pattern. So about basically 70% of yields in the control and the hybrid, increasing to about 85 to 90% in the manure and the compost. And this may not be totally a nitrogen effect. So the beets, they get seeded, and then there might be a mulching benefit of having these organic amendments beyond whatever the nitrogen they can provide. And we don't get this as much with the hybrid and the control because the application rates are much lower. And as you see, a sharper response to plant available nitrogen in the cauliflower than in the beets. So if we take a look at a very coarse mass balance, taking out any potential losses, and that is a huge caveat, But basically, the control we designed to be under-fertilized for nitrogen, and surprisingly, we got just that. So we saw a decrease or a depletion in both of these years, leading to soil mining in the long term. So even though we're balancing phosphorus okay, we're depleting the soil of its nitrogen, and that's not a long-term solution. If we're looking at terms of the other treatments, we do see in 2015 quite a bit of accumulation of nitrogen in all of these systems, and a deficit in 2016. Overall, we get somewhat of a close balance for the full rotation. But this, again, this assumes no loss for 2015. We have very high rains in the winter in British Columbia, sandy soils, so a lot of that nitrogen probably just leached out. And if you're wondering why on earth did we apply so much more nitrogen, there's two reasons for that. The first one is that we targeted crop recommendations, not mass balance for nitrogen. And the brassicaceae are notorious for leaving a lot of nitrogen on the ground with the residues because you harvest them when they're very still green. The leaves are green, they're full of nitrogen. And so that's not surprising that we're getting this surplus here. If we're looking at phosphorus balance, our true treatments that were basically designed to be in greater phosphorus balance kind of achieved that. So the control and the hybrid, as you can see, have a little bit of a greater excess here. That's because our cauliflower yields were lower than we expected, but did better overall in the beets. And overall, we have not too bad of a P surplus. The P recovery was above 20% for cauliflower, so relatively low, but then again, that's not so uncommon for this kind of crop. For beets, it was over 80%, so we recovered a lot of the phosphorus we applied. For the compost and the manures, these two treatments, we knew we were over-fertilizing for phosphorus, and this, if you've worked with nitrogen, if you work with organic amendments targeting nitrogen demand, this shouldn't be a surprise to you, but basically huge over-fertilization of phosphorus for both of these systems. And basically, very low recoveries, less than 10% in the cauliflower, less than 40% in the beets. What you do see that for the poultry manure, that lower end of pea crop kind of helped us. It didn't take us the whole way, but at least we didn't accumulate as much as we would expect it. And based on these two systems, these two balances, we would expect a larger soil phosphorus accumulation in the compost than in the manure. So did we see that? Not really. This is basically the delta soil phosphorus. So we measured available phosphorus with a resin extract, not a maleic, a Bray, or a Holson. And basically, this is the difference between the measurement at a given time and the initial conditions, which is why it's all at zero here at the first time step. And so you see some change in time. But at the end of the experiment, you do see that the only one where we measure an accumulation of phosphorus is in the manure system. We do not see that in the compost, despite having a larger phosphorus imbalance. So what this suggests to us is that the phosphorus may be less, it wouldn't make sense that the phosphorus is less available in the compost than it is in the manure. And as a result, maybe even though we have a bigger balance, because it's not as readily available, it doesn't contribute as much to available phosphorus surplus. So in conclusion, we saw that the yields were not necessarily well predicted by soil nitrogen in the sense that we didn't see that much of a response in 2016 to soil nitrogen. The compost, which had the highest yield, had not so great of soil nitrogen. The yields were highest in the manure for both years. Hybrid and the compost kind of had were also good for cauliflower for beets, which leads us to think that this high nitrogen fertilizer, this blood meal, was only really useful in the cauliflower. And the manure and compost both had high P surpluses. However, we only saw soil phosphorus accumulation with the manure, suggesting that the form of phosphorus played a big role in seeing that pattern or not. So that is all I have, and I'll take any questions if there's time.
Okay. Actually, we're 1 minute for questions.
Yeah.
Toward the beginning of your presentation, you had a table with percentages of N and your different organic sources, and there was a line that said N available.
Mm-hmm.
How did you figure that out?
That's a great question. So basically the question is, I had a table with basically the available nitrogen. So for the compost, we used, so we didn't send that, but the supplier sends it to a lab in California where they do an extensive test. So based on active carbon respiration and nitrogen and nitrate at the time of sampling, they estimate, so it was either 6 pounds per cubic yard or 9 pounds per cubic yard. For the manure, we took values from the literature. It was composted poultry manure. It wasn't fresh, but the facility we work with, it's barely composted, so it's pretty hot still. It's not the bag stuff you would get at Home Depot. And then the other one, the blood meal, it's from a paper from Tim Hartz in California, who looked at different feather meal, blood meal, etc. Well, so there's a no-show, so if people have additional questions, I can get grilled for longer.
Yeah, if not, our next talk will be starting at 11:15.
Okay, yes?
Why did you decide to go with blood meal over feather or another specialty?
That's a great question. We went with blood meal because that's what the UBC farm preferred at that stage. They also had the idea, and I had too, that it was more readily available, which I don't think that's correct necessarily. I think it's as available, or at least in the long term. So that's why we went with blood meal. At that time too, the price difference wasn't that different. Now it changed dramatically, so blood meal is much more expensive. So that's why we did. And also, I think it's more technically water soluble, so you could use it in a fertigation system, kind of, whereas feather meal you can't really. So.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yes, you had a question.
Three questions.
Yes, oh boy.
We have a moment.
Yeah, apparently.
Did you look at the potassium?
No.
Did you look at zinc?
No.
Okay. Did you look at the microbiome?
We didn't look at the microbiome either, no. So this is basically what I did look at was looking at greenhouse gas emissions, so in terms of like the additional stuff. We didn't look so much about potassium because my interest was more looking at nitrogen, phosphorus, and the relationship between the two. We have some more data. I didn't show that, but in terms of nitrogen, phosphorus uptake, et cetera. But no, we did not look at potassium, zinc, or microbiome. Could have probably looked more easily at potassium and zinc because looking at microbiome is a whole different story. So you need a good collaborator with this if you're not going to do it yourself. It would be great, but at some point, I had limited resources.
So when you look at the yield, was that a marketable yield or a total yield?
Marketable yield. So basically, we harvested all those. We didn't have, those are relatively small plots. I didn't show any pictures, but we didn't have that many plants. So we measured marketable yield for all the cauliflower, the cabbages, the fennel, and the beets.
And
yeah?
And did you look at the nutrient concentration in the tissues?
We did. And as I was saying, the session organizer, usually I have like a bunch of extra slides, but I took them out this time. If I recall correctly, for phosphorus, there wasn't that much of a difference in terms of the phosphorus concentrations. It was more just the yield kind of driving everything. And I can't recall what it looked for nitrogen. For nitrogen, yes. For nitrogen, it was highest and higher in all the three. So basically, manure, compost, and hybrid were all high. And then control was lower, if I recall correctly. And that's both true in the cover crops as well as in the cash crops. Yes?
Any insights from the greenhouse gas emission additional work that you did? Was there any?
Yes. So basically what we saw for the greenhouse gas, actually I'm also giving a talk tomorrow, so I'm going to split them into two. Didn't want to present all the same information. So for carbon, so CO2, methane, basically looked all the same, even though we had much higher carbon inputs with the compost than we did with the other two. For nitrous oxide, it was highest in the manure, and then after that, it was highest with the hybrid, and then the compost and the control were relatively similar. So the hybrid kind of fell in between. And in terms of residual nitrogen in the fall of 2015, that was also highest in the hybrid and then the manure than the other two. So you have more kind of nitrogen environmental impacts with this hybrid or this manure. And we did see, quite interestingly, we did see a huge peak with that residue plowing, disking. The peak of nitrous oxide was almost as high as we saw when we added the fertilizers. So that was a shock to me. But yes, we did see one, especially, so basically the way, I didn't talk too much about the management of the situation, so it's heavily tilled, it's one of these intensive systems. So they basically disk the residue in the fall, and in the spring, They mowed the cover crop, they moldboard plowed, and then they did two extra tillage events to maintain. So they did one tillage to maintain weed control after 2 weeks, and then after 2 weeks, we incorporated the amendments with shallow tillage again, so the rotary tiller. So we see a big peak with that moldboard plow effect. But it was also dry that year. You know, it's when you we had, it was a two-year postdoc, so there's so much you could do as well. But you know, I wish I had more data to tell you a more definitive answer about the tillage. And that's something for sure that I would like to look at in the future. How can you do? Because you can do reduced tillage in these vegetable systems, but it can be a little bit more challenging.
These are low organic matter sands, right?
They're high organic matter sands, yes. So that's where, you know, that little bump, I don't know if you were there, but that little bump could be due from the, actually we have 9% organic matter in these hills. So keep in mind that, so it's the Pacific Northwest, so, and it was made on an old spodosol, so it has a lot of potential to build, and they have added compost. So it's a research farm, but it's a teaching farm, so they don't have necessarily the same economic constraints that some growers have, and so they've added a lot of compost throughout the years. So a lot of that, you know, that control, of course, gets subsidies from that organic matter, especially in the beets, etc. But in over the long term, you would deplete that for sure. No, that's crazy high. I'm aware of that. I should have mentioned it, but no, basically, and it's not necessarily representative of what the If you go south, the biggest growing region in BC is just maybe half or 45 minutes south, and there it's on alluvial soils. And then they grow a lot of potatoes, heavy tillage, so their organic matter levels are more 1.5 to 2%. So it's not just a climate thing. It's also they've added tons of manures and compost over the years, and basically that just build up. Yes?
Just to comment on that, there's a lot of smaller intensive farms that are applying absurd amounts.
Yeah. Yeah, the small mixed veg system, yeah, that's a fair point. And you know, a lot of people will do it, especially certified organic, to build a soil or feed the soil. I used to say that feeding the soil is not an excuse for sloppy nutrient management, but you don't necessarily count the phosphorus that you over apply. I was doing work with Eric Brennan in Salinas for my PhD, and we saw the same thing. The nutrient was well balanced because he switched from a poultry manure application only to poultry manure to fish extracts and much more, and he had, you know, his phosphorus levels or his phosphorus input outputs looked great with just the fertilizers, but then when you factored in the compost, you had like a 40 kilograms of phosphorus per hectare every year that you were adding in excess. So,
did you see the interaction between CN ratio and nitrogen phosphorus ratio and the relationship in your report?
You mean in the compost or in the
overall?
I mean, we did. I mean, there's typically the thing with the compost, the carbon nitrogen ratio is that, and the NP ratio too. The NP ratio, it depends if you look at it from the total or from the available. So they look quite different when you take the available nitrogen, the total nitrogen, but then if you refactor them with the available nitrogen, the poultry manure and the compost, and the other manures look much more similar. And then for carbon nitrogen ratio, we did see that, you know, the compost, even though it has the carbon nitrogen ratio that's not that high because it's pre-decomposed material, that's one of the reasons why the carbon nitrogen ratio is not great. So we did see some, we did see that the higher carbon nitrogen ratio in the compost resulted in less CO2 emissions per kilogram applied, for example. And in terms of the nitrogen-phosphorus ratio, the ones that when we provided more nitrogen had more nitrogen in the plants. So the NP ratio was biased. But that's not, you know, that experiment, we're still kind of looking at the data and analyzing everything. So I'm not sure that's a great answer. I know it's not a great answer to your question, but we're still looking at it. Yes?
So are the native pHs in these soils more acidic or more alkaline?
There would be more acidic on the range of acidic, but in there, they're closer between 6 and 7. So this is basically, think about a spruce forest that you would log. You have glacial till, and then you would put a farm for 30 years. Most of the farms aren't in this setting. It was made there because it was close to campus, I think, so from a teaching perspective. This is kind of what you find in a lot of those small organic vegetable growers, again, because the good land has been taken already by the big producers. So it does represent better some of these conditions. But I think because they've applied, I didn't show the pH effects here, but that compost system actually had higher pH, so closer to 6.5, whereas some of the others, especially after you add the blood meal and have a lot of nitrification, you do see, and in the composted poultry manure, you do see this pH dropping below 6. So probably these extended applications of compost in past years have helped maintain that pH similarly, because that land hadn't been factorially grown for decades. You know, so after 10, 20 years, we may see a difference in pH of some of that going back because of the lower amendment rates.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you again for the question.